Welcome to Afterglow. I'm David Brent Johnson, and for the next hour, I'll be featuring the music and history of a legendary jazz orchestra that served in one of the greatest causes the world has ever known, led by a bandleader who vanished at the height of his popularity. I'll also be talking with Nat Peck, a former member of the orchestra, and historian Michael McGurr, as well as jazz educators Brent Wallerab and Janice Stockhouse. It's Sustain the Wings, Major Glenn Miller Goes to War with the Army Air Force Band, coming up next on Afterglow.
But we were still dancing, which goes to show that music has charms. The lights were low, so we kept on dancing. I felt the glow of you in my arms. The band had left the stand, we were in heaven, dancing on a cloud way off in the blue. The music stopped, and people were glancing, but we went on dancing, for we didn't know, because the lights were low, and we were in love. Thank you. stopped, we went on dancing, we didn't know. We were in love.
Johnny Desmond with Glenn Miller's Army Air Force Band performing The Music Stopped in the spring of 1944, and the Army Air Force Band before that doing Jerry Gray's Enlisted Men's Mess, both from the Set the Secret broadcast. July 24, 1942, 8 months after America's entry into World War II, and Glenn Miller was broadcasting his last Chesterfield radio program. The 38-year-old bandleader had enlisted and was now a captain in the Army.
Goodman and Kaiser and Miller helped to make things right.
Mixing hot links with vanilla, jukebox Saturday night. They put nothing faster.
Me and honey laugh,
making one Coke lesser.
Till it's time to scram.
Money we really don't need that.
We'll make out all right.
Let the other guy beat that. Jukebox Saturday night.
After sipping a soda, we got a scheme. Somebody else plays a record machine. It's so easy to say pet names when you listen to the trumpet of Harry James.
You listen here to me, honey child, if I didn't know. All of them there little things I'm supposed to know. Then I wouldn't be one of the ink spots.
If I didn't know.
Boom, 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 boom.
Jukebox Saturday Night, and that lad that imitated Harry James really did a job. The reason? Because it was Harry James himself. Harry, come on over here and say something.
Well, hello, everybody.
Now, Harry, naturally, we're very reluctant to give up our moonlight serenade. But since I got a date with Uncle Sam coming up, I can sincerely say I'd rather have you take over our regular Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday spot than anyone I know. So, next Tuesday, get to work, mister.
Well, Captain Miller, coming from you, that's an order. But seriously, Glenn, I'm sure everyone agrees with me that you're doing a mighty fine thing in joining the Army.
Thank you very much, Harry. I'll swallow. You know, folks, it makes me feel a little sad to leave Marion, Tex, Skip, the Modern Airs, this wonderful gang of boys in the band, and all our friends listening. But there's a lot of swell guys in the outfit I'm going in, and maybe all of us can get together again after this thing is over. In the meantime, I'll see you all in the Army, and we'll say goodbye in the best way we know how.
Thank you.
1942, the Glenn Miller Orchestra was one of the most popular, best-selling big bands in America, with songs such as In the Mood, Moonlight Serenade, and Pennsylvania 65,000 becoming jukebox staples, and Chattanooga Choo Choo the first million-selling record. The Miller Band had appeared in two movies and was slated for more. Jazz educator and bandleader Janice Stockhouse on what made the Miller Band so successful.
The Miller sound just was very swinging, and it was largely horn-dominated. And he was great about going back and forth between a saxophone solely, and then the brass took over. And I don't think one necessarily listened to the Miller Band for the soloists, but they certainly got excited by what the horn sections did. And his use of dynamics always would bring the house down. He knew how to entertain, and that's what his music did. When you went to a Glenn Miller show, you knew what you were going to hear. You'd hear probably that same solo time and time again, but maybe that was what people looked forward to. They wanted to hear that solo and see Tex Beneke or whoever. It was very, very entertaining. It was never a dull moment. And he had both the powerful sounds, and then he would go to the other side and make your heart melt with the Moonlight Serenade.
At 38, Glenn Miller was under no obligation to serve in the armed forces, but he chose to break up his popular civilian orchestra and join the war effort, hoping to contribute in the way he knew best, directing a musical unit. After some uncertain bouncing around in the military, Miller landed at Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut, where he began to put together what would come to be known as the Army Air Force Band. It started out as a 40-piece orchestra and would eventually encompass a big band unit, an easy-listening strings ensemble, a modern jazz small group, a vocal group, and a pianist-singer duo. One of Miller's first orders of business was to jazz up the John Philip Sousa marches and other old warhorses of the military marching band. When one officer complained to Miller that the marches from World War I still sounded just fine to him, Miller retorted, "Tell me, Major, are you flying the same planes you flew in the last war?" Brent Wallerab and Janice Stockhouse on one of the most significant salvos in Miller's mission to revitalize military marching band music, his treatment of W.C. Handy's St. Louis Blues.
He picked those tempos, those standard march tempos that the military bands march to and drill to, and kind of layered in these really nice swinging big band arrangements over top of it. It worked great, and the morale was great, you know, for the musicians. Of course, he did suffer, you know, from that criticism. But really, so much of jazz, the march influence is one of the early influences of jazz in the first place. And when you listen to a lot of jazz, pretty much up until 1930, in a way, you hear a lot of these march kind of components as far as the form of the tune. So it's really not that much of a stretch to go back to the marches. I think St. Louis Blues March is one great example where it can be just really swinging, but it really has that rhythm underneath it. And one way they did it was they have the marching band out there playing these arrangements and have a drum set that have like a big piece of plywood strapped to the back of a Jeep. And they'd bolt a drum set down and tie the drummer under the little stool, and he'd be back there playing a drum set on a Jeep that's following along with the marching band instead of having the standard bass drum and cymbals.
The cadence, the drum cadence, jup, 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 jup. Boy, I see the army, a slick, modern, hip army of Yanks coming over across the pond. It's almost glamorizing the men who went overseas to fight.
We'll be right back.
This was the orchestra that 18-year-old trombonist Nat Peck heard when he arrived in New Haven in 1943 to report for duty as a member of Glenn Miller's ensemble. He was walking in the direction of the University Green when he heard the band out for its daily morning parade.
When I first heard the band, it was overwhelming. Tremendous, tremendous. I never expected anything like that from a military band.
For Glenn Miller, the war had provided a unique musical opportunity. He could assemble the biggest, best band in the armed forces without concern for cost. Historian Michael McGurr.
He got musicians in the war that he'd not gotten before, even on top. The rap on Miller's band, even when it was riding high in 41, 42, was that its rhythm section wasn't particularly good. And his Air Force band gets this great rhythm section with Trigger Alpert on drums, Mel Powell playing piano. So the war gives Glenn Miller an opportunity he really didn't have, despite all of his fame, success, and leverage.
Because of his stature, Miller also had license to pull any outstanding jazz musicians who were already serving elsewhere into his orchestra. Though some initially chafed at the idea of working for Glenn Miller, for most it was a happy event. Nat Peck was one such musician. He actually wrote a letter to Miller asking to be put into his unit.
Oh, I was easy. I was easy, but he did have some pretty good people, like Mel, like Ray McKinley, like Peanut Sarko, like Bernie Priven, and so on. So, nobody would say no to a Glenn Miller offer, in the Army, that is. And so he was able to assemble a top-notch orchestra. Really, you couldn't ever do better in civilian days than he did in the Army.
Bandleader and jazz educator Brent Wallerab concurs.
It was like a kid in a candy store when he was given this opportunity. He could handpick the best musicians and bring them in. And, of course, he would expand it with a string section. And he was also able to handpick his arranging staff. I mean, I kind of like to think in a way, who knows, he may have really saved some lives of some really great musicians by bringing them in from various theaters and saying, you're in my band now.
Something new, Sergeant Johnny Desmond, the crew chief, singing Moon Dreams.
Moon dreams, dancing on my pillow. Moon dreams,
recall a night of paradise with you out of the blue. The silver waves were rolling,
and in the distance a tango started, floating like a feather, gay and summer-hearted. We never once questioned whether
our night of love together would ever die. Mountains,
waves rolling,
I see them when the moon beams shine.
Once again in moon dreams you are mine.
the Glenn Miller Army Air Force Band playing Ralph Wilkinson's arrangement of Chummy McGregor and Johnny Mercer's Moon Dreams, which would be recorded just a few years later by Miles Davis's Birth of the Cool Band, Johnny Desmond and the Crew Chiefs on vocals. Jazz educator and bandleader Janice Stockhouse says Moon Dreams offers yet more evidence of the orchestra's ability.
Great musicianship, fine intonation, great technique in the string section. It all works together perfectly. This is really high-level music making.
The Miller Military Band could swing, too, as evidenced by this Jerry Gray composition and arrangement, Jeep Jockey Jump. The Glenn Miller Army Air Force Band doing Jeep Jockey Jump. The recordings of the Miller Army Air Force Band that were made stateside were broadcast on a national radio show called I Sustain the Wings. The band's arrangers put together an impressive book incorporating Miller's civilian band standards and new material that included popular songs of the moment. The orchestra worked hard, rehearsing constantly, as Nat Peck recalls.
The way those rehearsals were conducted, it was like a religious ceremony. That is, it was done with so much intelligence and respect for the music, and it revealed that Miller was an absolute fantastic musician because he was able to virtually transform an arrangement by Jerry Gray or Al Laden or Ralph Wilkinson by just adding a few touches here and there, and suddenly that arrangement became fantastic.
Oh, what a beautiful morning.
a bright golden haze on the meadow.
The corn is as high as an elephant's eye,
and it looks like it's climbing clear up to the sky. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way. Everything's going my way.
Glenn Miller's Army Air Force Band doing Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein's Oh, What a Beautiful Morning from the hit 1943 musical Oklahoma. Michael McGurr on the Miller Military Band's diverse approach to its songbook.
He was very astute at reaching a whole range of audiences and making them all comfortable enough to stay with it. Really think of it as a kind of musical variety show that's closer to that, to the kind of reviews that, say, a black ragtime band like James Reese Europe would do. With comedy features. Well, Miller wasn't going to do comedy, but they do a bunch of different things in the context of a performance.
Brent Wallerab also cites James Reese Europe as a precedent for Miller's AAF orchestra.
Well, it's not that it had not been done before. In World War I, there was Lieutenant James Reese Europe and his 369th Hellfighters Band, where they took blues and ragtime and jazz tunes and some popular kind of southern type dances and orchestrated them out for military band. And they were very, very active during World War I in Europe. They saw action. And so it had been done before. I think that the expectation, though, of Glenn Miller, and I don't know if there was a racial component to it. I think because of Europe's band being an all-black band, they said, well, you know, this is something that is maybe more acceptable from black American musicians. But then when you had Glenn Miller come in, I think that they felt that it was maybe more quote-unquote official. Or if they even knew about the James Reese Europe Band, they may not have even not been on their radar screen.
And Michael McGurr says Miller's AAF had yet another precedent.
Glenn Miller seems so original a figure, and certainly vital one. You can almost forget that he grew up with an example that he clearly followed, and it's Paul Whiteman, the first king of jazz. Paul Whiteman was a white musician who was brilliant at incorporating the new music of jazz and fitting it into a much more elaborate structure that included varieties of straight popular music, ballad singing, the fun of Bing Crosby and the Rhythm Boys, and something also more orchestral, something fitting for Carnegie Hall, somebody who would premiere Gershwin. And Glenn Miller was a young musician when Paul Whiteman had that kind of fame. And it's interesting to see how clearly his career tracks Whiteman. In the late 30s, Miller becomes the best at incorporating jazz safely into a broader kind of big band music with strings and accessible music. And then when the war comes along and he's given the opportunity to have an enormous band, he finally gets the string section that he'd only briefly had back in, 1937, and had lost very quickly because the band flopped. He's finally got a band of Whiteman-esque proportions. And so, and it's quite original, it's distinctive, but his career really does parallel Paul Whiteman in absorbing new kinds of music, packaging them in a fresh way that lets people hear new sounds and yet makes them think it's all right, that it's acceptable.
We've received many requests to attempt something musically more serious with our orchestra. It's in answer to these requests that we play a symphonic composition from the pen of the eminent young American composer, Alfred Dexter. After the introduction, the main theme is stated by the strings, followed in true symphonic form by the development, transition, recapitulation, and finale. Here it is, specially arranged and broadcast for the first time on this program.
Flying fortress with a knocked out name.
Pistol packing mama, hear the airmen say. Pistol packing mama, lay those bombs away.
Why, just the other morning, the CO walked on in. Then the CO told us that we would bomb Berlin.
Pistol packing mama, spread your wings and flap. Lay those bombs away, babe. Right in
Hitler's. Oh, then we boarded Mama, and Mama took us high in the wild blue yonder, high into the sky.
Pistol packing Mama, see that land below. Pistol packing, mama, let your pistols go.
And spin that turret, mama, spit them bullets clean. Shake them old engines and shake that old machine.
Push aside that agate, lay it on the line. Pistol packing, mama, babe, you're doing fine.
Well, now the job is done, babe, baby, take a bow. We'll be back tomorrow, but let's go home for now.
Lay those bombs away, babe, lay those bombs away. Pistol packing, mama, lay those bombs away.
Glenn Miller Army Air Force Band performing Pistol Packin' Mama on their Sustain the Wings radio program. The Miller Army Air Force Band could do it all, but there was one thing they hadn't done yet that Glenn Miller desperately wanted, to go overseas and perform for the troops in the European Theater of Operations. On June 10, 1944, the Miller Band broadcast from Chicago. Several days before, the Allies had launched the D-Day invasion.
Sustain the wings. I sustain the wings. The Army Air Forces present the Band of the Training Command, under the direction of Captain Glenn Miller. And now, Captain Glenn Miller.
Thank you, Lieutenant Don Briggs, and good evening, everybody. It's been a big week for our side. Over on the beaches of Normandy, our boys have fired the opening guns of the long-awaited drive to liberate the world. And over here, the folks who are backing up those boys are staging another big push of their own, the Fifth War Loan Drive. To lend a hand with the band, we're swinging around the countryside ourselves to do what we can to keep those invasion dollars moving over to the fighting front where they're needed, in the shape of guns, tanks, and planes. And tonight, we're at the Servicemen's Center here in Chicago, where already over 12 million servicemen and women have been guests of the city of Chicago. Now, to get to the little music, here are the boys with their rocket gun version of Flying Home.
What Miller didn't tell his enthusiastic audience was this: the band was leaving for England, the result of a sustained campaign by Miller, who felt it imperative for the orchestra to be able to entertain troops who were seeing action or close to the front. The only possible hint his listeners could have had came from his sign-off at the end of the show.
This is Captain Glenn Miller saying so long for all our gang. Next week, I Sustain the Wings will be brought to you by another band of the training command of the Army Air Forces, with Captain Bob Jennings, the CO, and the music under the direction of Sergeant Harry Bluestone. We've enjoyed playing for you, and we hope you've enjoyed listening to us.
Glenn Miller signing off from a Chicago broadcast on June 10, 1944, shortly before the Army Air Force Band headed overseas to England. I'll have more of the music of the Glenn Miller Army Air Force Band and my conversations with band member Nat Peck and historian Michael McGurr in just a few moments. Production support for Afterglow comes from Bicycle Garage, offering complete bicycle repair and sales, as well as custom fitting services. Located at 507 East Kirkwood next to the IU campus and online at bikegarage.com. Bicycle Garage, for bicycling around the block and around the world since 1980. I'm David Brent Johnson, and you're listening to Sustain the Wings. Major Glenn Miller goes to war with the Army Air Force Band. I'm featuring the music of the Glenn Miller Army Air Force Band on this edition of Afterglow and talking with AAF band member Nat Peck, historian Michael McGurr, and jazz educators Brent Wallerab and Janice Stockhouse. On June 22, 1944, the Glenn Miller Army Air Force Band departed for England on the Queen Elizabeth liner. Nat Peck remembers that there were thousands of troops on the boat, which made even a simple task like eating lunch almost impossible.
I lived on Hershey Bars for the whole crossing. I mean, the reason for that was the queues were monumentally long. You get on a queue for lunch, for example, and you'd have to get on a queue about 9 o'clock in the morning to get your lunch. And so it became pretty tiresome, and we decided to, well, I did anyway, to try to do without the food, which was pretty awful anyway.
Peck and his fellow band members stayed in musical shape by giving small combo concerts all over the ship. He says they initially had no concerns about going overseas.
Well, you know, musicians never get that excited. And nobody was nervous, because we didn't realize what was going on over in England. And it only came to our attention when we got off the boat and got into a train and headed for London. And when we got off that train, we were greeted by the first V-bombs. And, of course, this made us a little worried.
Miller went to work immediately to get the band moved out of London and succeeded, just in time, as it turned out, for the day after they left, the building they'd been quartered in was hit, killing 27 military policemen who were living there.
He felt guilty about it. He said, well, what did I get you guys into? Because, like us, he was unaware of the fact that the V-bombs were falling. And he did his best to get us out of London, and we ended up in Bedford, which is about 50 miles north of London, and we had our headquarters there. They also provided a recording facility, pretty good, actually, although a lot had to be done to make it really playable and recordable. That's where we spent most of our time, and that, combined with the various tours we did to the air bases all over England, and then the weekend in London at the Shaftesbury Avenue All Services Club, where we gave our concerts, that pretty much took all our time.
The band settled in and went to work, giving by one estimate 800 performances during its time in England. Nat Peck says that the band was greeted there as it had been in America.
The amount of enthusiasm that was generated when the band appeared in public was quite fantastic. But I didn't think that it was going to carry over to Europe. And there, it was even more intense. I've had quite a lot of experience with big bands playing and concerts and so on, and I never heard the absolute folly of the public listening to the Glenn Miller music. It was quite incredible.
Paul Dudley, a technical sergeant in the AAF who wrote and directed its radio shows, later wrote of the reaction he witnessed one night. The American band of the AEF mounted a makeshift stage inside a giant steel hangar. 3,500 men of the 8th Air Force sat on the dirt floor, on the wings of planes, and on the lofty beams overhead, as the opening theme, Moonlight Serenade, pumped the psychological lifeblood of American music back into those youthful, homesick hearts. Captain Miller walked out onto the stage, and an eerie yell of welcome swelled from the audience, a happy cry, yet filled with the weird wildness of a torrential spill of suddenly released frustrations. Colonel Kirby, whose efforts had transported the band to the ETO, stood proudly listening at the far end of the hangar. After the show, Glenn walked straight to him to say, "Colonel, making all the money in the music business could never have made me feel this rich."
End of the AEF, originating at the Queensbury All Services Club in London. Moonlight Serenader, Major Glenn Miller, presenting the American band of the AEF in one half hour of Easy Listening.
As the Allies moved across France in the late summer and early autumn of 1944, some thought the war might be over with by Christmas. Here's the Miller Army Air Force Band in England performing a newly penned tribute to the liberation of France, introduced by Glenn Miller.
Now you boys, Tommies and Yanks, Johnny Canucks, who are flying and driving and marching the road to victory, made this happy new song possible. It not only inspired the boys who wrote it, but also popped a lot of new ideas into the head of the soldier who arranged it. Here's Sergeant Jerry Gray's most recent piece of writing, marking the first time out of our starting gate for All's Well, Mademoiselle.
They say in dear old Gay Paris.
All's well, mademoiselle.
We started out in Normandy, it won't be long till victory.
Hearts will sing that happy day. France will ring with the Marseillaise.
All's well, mademoiselle. Soon you will dance again, love and romance again.
Vive la France again, mademoiselle.
Thank you.
down for tonight. And now this is Major Glenn Miller thanking Gloria Brent for stopping by, reminding you all that 1 week from now we'll be back to deliver another half hour cut along these same lines. If this is your kind of music, well, your kind of band will be right here to play it for you. So it's good luck. Good night.
The Glenn Miller Army Air Force Band on one of its regular radio programs for American soldiers in England, doing All's Well, Mademoiselle. We're going to hear a rare encounter of two 1940s American icons now, Glenn Miller and Bing Crosby. The two never recorded commercially together. This very lo-fi recording of Crosby joining the AAF for a concert in England emerged decades later in the 1980s. Nat Peck remembers Crosby's arrival that day.
In with a tray full of Scotch whiskey and so on, and Glenn absolutely forbade us to drink before the concert, before the program, which we did, but we had a lovely party afterwards, and Bing was a terrific man, really wonderful personality, and we enjoyed working with him.
Tonight we're forgetting the idea of saving the best for the last by moving the main attraction up to the two spot. Nothing I could say could top the feeling you Tommies and Yanks have already expressed toward this guy. So I'm just going to lay it on the line, short and sweet. Here's Bing Crosby.
It's certainly high honor, Major Glenn Miller, sharing this all-Allied audience and the music of your all-American band. You know, if I were making tanks or aeroplanes or something like that, I'd be a lot closer to understanding why you guys out there might be wanting anything that I have to offer. I'm just hoping that your demand lasts as long as my supply. So whatever I got to sell ain't going to get any closer to a deal if I don't taste the conversation here and swing into a slight sonata. Shall we say something that would be doing big business around the rumble seat circuit if you Yanks were back there to take up with your summer night party, Major?
Long ago was you. mighty fancy, Mr. Crosby, as usual. Your voice is what the well-dressed throng should be wearing, and I mean any season.
Bing Crosby performing Long Ago and Far Away with the Glenn Miller Army Air Force Orchestra in England on August 31, 1944. Michael McGurr on the Miller-Crosby connection.
Glenn Miller really pairs with Bing Crosby, certainly for people in the United States, as epitomizing an image of America, of what a good American is, someone who serves, someone who's modest, someone who's purposeful. Glenn Miller particularly was going to get the job done and had that image, yet who was self-effacing. That was the kind of America that people wanted to believe in. It's the same set of traits that made Bing Crosby such a star, too. And what's interesting to me, the flip side of that is true as well, that for the British, Bing Crosby and Glenn Miller represented a safer kind of America for them, an America that was hip but not too hip, was modern, efficient, productive, but still attractive and not scary. The fascination of the British with Glenn Miller still kind of amazes me. And I think it is because he was, aside from being a good musician, he really was reassuring for these people whose island was inundated with Americans and worried with that old cliche about oversexed, overpaid, and over here. Miller was a suggestion that that would be okay, that America wasn't this troublesome invader, but a reassuring kind of modest partner.
To a few American hepcat soldiers, though, the Miller Band's reassurance was, well, kind of square.
One time a soldier wrote a very negative letter back to the U.S. to the jazz magazine Metronome, faulting Miller's AAF band for not being hip enough, basically, not jazzy enough. And Miller was furious and wrote at great length to the Metronome critic George Simon to say, "You don't understand. I'm playing music for soldiers who are not up with current music. I play music that's 2 years old." And you stop and think, what a stunning admission. And really, England in the war was a kind of hothouse environment where you have soldiers, young as they were, who were nostalgic for music that was hip 2 years before, and you have the British, for understandable reasons, still catching up with musical fashion. So Miller's AAF band is a strange time capsule. Even at the height of its popularity, it already represents a music whose time is passing, and Miller knew it.
The size of his orchestra gave Miller the chance to make most of his listeners happy in one way or another, with the easy-listening Strings with Wings ensemble, the Swing Shift Big Band, singer Johnny Desmond and the Crew Chiefs vocal group, and more. He maintained his musical authority over the various components of the AAF, but he did give free rein to one musician, the young pianist and arranger Mel Powell, who led the AAF's Uptown Hall Gang, a small modernistic group that included clarinetist Peanuts Hucko and Nat Peck on trombone.
He had control of the choice of material, but nobody objected to that because his choices were always very musical, very interesting. Mel was the one exception. I remember when we started the Uptown Hall broadcasts, Miller came around for the first day, and he virtually wrote the theme song with Mel there and then. My Guys Come Home, I think is the name of it. After that, we never saw him. And the instruction that Miller may have left with him was, do whatever you want. And he did.
The Uptown Hall Gang was Miller's nod to those seeking a hipper form of jazz. It included among its repertoire a song that was barely known yet to the general public, Dizzy Gillespie's bebop anthem, A Night in Tunisia. Yes, that's right. A component of the Glenn Miller Orchestra was performing A Night in Tunisia in 1944. Not even Dizzy Gillespie or Charlie Parker had recorded it yet.
Junior Collins, a French horn player, was a great enthusiast for bebop and the new music in Dizzy Gillespie. Somehow he was asked to write an arrangement on one of those tunes, which happened to be A Night in Tunisia. And it was not easy to play.
In this little aggregation of ours, there's a man who plays the French horn with a Shreveport accent. He's Corporal Addison S. Collins, Jr. And among his many accomplishments, he'll also turn out an arrangement now and then if he uses whips. We've penciled in one of his arrangements tonight for our closing number. And here it is, Night in Tunisia.
There'll be another program by the Swing Sextet next Friday evening at 7:15.
The Swing Sextet performing All Remember April, and the Uptown Hall Gang before that doing Dizzy Gillespie's bebop anthem Night in Tunisia with Mel Powell in the piano chair on both recordings. As the Allies' war progress continued in the autumn of 1944, Glenn Miller was already making post-war plans. The October 1, 1944 issue of Downbeat reported that Miller was definitely set for movie work and performances at New York City's Paramount Theater when he returned. It also stated that his new civilian orchestra would be modeled after the Army Air Force Band, and that he would play select concerts in key cities instead of touring constantly. Michael McGurr thinks that Miller would have found that a tough road to hoe.
It's difficult to imagine what kind of musical terrain Glenn Miller would have found after World War II back in the United States. Most of the big bands were collapsing. It's hard to imagine that Miller would have been able to maintain this enormous moving variety act that his AAF band had become. And you tend to think that, like Paul Whiteman, he would have had a great deal of difficulty and probably would have had to do something very different.
In the meantime, the band kept up a grueling schedule. Nat Peck recalls that the pace picked up as the year wound down to a close. Miller wanted to take the band across the channel to France, where they could play for soldiers fighting on the front lines.
We did work hard, I'll tell you, especially when we were trying to go overseas, and the BBC wouldn't let us go overseas until we had finished our commitment with the BBC, which meant recording a ton of programs, all one after the other. And, I mean, you know, if I were going to be paid for the work I did during the war with the Glenn Miller Band, I could have retired immediately after the war.
Among the recordings the Miller Band made were propaganda sides waxed at Abbey Road, the studio that would famously play host to the Beatles two decades later. Michael McGurr.
It's sort of hilarious to listen to those broadcasts of the Wehrmacht Hour, as it was called, this hour devoted to the soldiers of the German army, in which Miller plays his standard repertoire. By and large, sometimes the lyrics are sung in German, and sometimes Miller himself speaks in German. But none of it is the kind of propaganda that the Germans themselves practiced. You know, they had their own radio broadcast, Charlie and His Orchestra, which so often are about how, American soldiers are being betrayed back at home, and meanwhile, it's all for the sake of blacks and the Jews. And here's Glenn Miller just doing exactly for a German audience what he does for an American audience. And again, it makes the propaganda palatable and smooth.
Nun, Herr Major Miller, was darf ich jetzt ankündigen?
Volga Boatman, that well-known Russian song in our own version. And we play it as a tribute to our fighting Russian allies.
Thank you.
Oh, Herr Major Miller, es ist doch wirklich wunderbar, dass es für einen amerikanischen Musiker kein Verboten und keine Einschränkungen gibt. Er spielt Musik, die er will, die Musik, die seinen Hörern gefällt. Gleichgültig ist, ob es amerikanische, deutsche, russische, chinesische oder jüdische Musik ist.
Ich verstehe Sie. America means freedom and there's no expression of freedom quite so sincere as music.
Nat Peck remembers the Abbey Road recordings featuring Ilse, the German-speaking propagandist, with bemusement. But the sadder consequences of the war were all around him and his bandmates. He recalls one such encounter.
Mostly, we went to airfields and gave concerts to the flyers and their associates. And some of them, one of them I remember, we was in a hospital where everybody was wounded and dying. And then we were trying to brighten things up with renditions of In the Mood, which I felt was very strange. And we didn't get much of a reaction from the poor audience. They were all doomed.
Hello there, folks. Welcome to another program of Strings with Wings. Radio, you know, is a sort of funny thing. You get up here in front of the microphone, play some tunes, and never know whether there's anybody listening or not. But we kind of figure there must be, because the kind of music we put out is just what we think you guys and gals like around this time of an evening. It's violin music played soft and slow. And whether you're out there or not, here we go. The first tune, Spring Will Be a Little Late This Year.
The Strings with Wings unit of the Miller Army Air Force Orchestra performing Spring Will Be a Little Late This Year, a brand new song at that point, recorded in Bedford, England on November 25, 1944, as the Miller Band worked at a furious pace to fulfill its obligations before crossing the channel to France. December 15, 1944. The new issue of Downbeat that carried that date featured stories about the Glenn Miller and Sam Donahue bands holding a wartime reunion in England, and Princess Antoinette of Monaco dancing with a GI to Glenn Miller records smuggled in from Switzerland. Miller himself that day was hitching a ride to Paris on a small airplane, eager to get to France and prepare for the full Army Air Force Orchestra to follow him and start playing for the soldiers fighting on the front lines. The weather that day was terrible for flying. Planes everywhere were grounded. That afternoon, Miller boarded a single-engine Norseman plane with a fellow officer and a pilot and took off for France, heading out over the English Channel. The plane was never seen again, and when the band arrived in Paris several days later, Miller was not at the airfield to greet them.
first clue, because normally Miller would have been there supplying transportation and so on. And there we were, waiting around in the cold and the wet, and then it was raining, and we had very little shelter, and nobody knew what was going on. Finally, Don Haynes showed up and made a few inquiries, and he organized the transportation back to the hotel. We all thought that it was one of Glenn Miller's adventures he was having at our expense, and it wasn't the case. He never made it. And we were all very despondent about that, I remember.
Not only was Glenn Miller nowhere to be found, the German army had launched its last-ditch effort to turn the tide of the war in France, and its initial success put Paris in danger of falling again. The AAF musicians were told they might need to take up arms, and winter in the wartime City of Lights had other disadvantages as well.
The Battle of the Bulge took place, and there's all kinds of talk about giving us rifles and sending us up to the front, which nobody cared too much about. It was a terribly cold, icy winter, and I remember at the Hotel des Olympiades that we stayed at, all of us had nice rooms. The only problem was they were not heated, because the proprietor of the hotel took our allocation of coal and sold it on the black market. Well, I never got undressed. It was so cold. I went to bed in full uniform.
Though the Germans were ultimately turned back without rifles having to be pressed into the hands of AAF musicians, the mystery of Glenn Miller's disappearance continued to reverberate throughout the orchestra.
Happen now, and we thought that it meant the breakup of the band.
On Christmas Day 1944, the Army Air Force Band joined the Canadian and British military bands and played for a shortwave radio broadcast from Paris that was relayed by the BBC to American audiences. It was the first time the orchestra had been heard stateside performing from Europe, and it followed by just a few hours the first official reports to the world that Major Glenn Miller had gone missing.
And so we come to the final item in our roundup. From the Queensbury All Services Club in London, we take you to hear a recording made earlier this Christmas Day at an Allied troop theater in Paris. There, before an audience composed of members of the Allied Expeditionary Forces, was the American band of the AEF, conducted by Sergeant Jerry Gray, substituting for Major Glenn Miller. Come in, American band of the AEF.
There we are in France on Christmas Day, 1944.
Thank you, Lieutenant Don Haynes, and hello, everybody. This is Warrant Officer Paul Dudley saying Merry Christmas to all of you in France and England and back home in the Big 48 for Major Glenn Miller's American Band of the AEF. Between shows on the AEF program, there's a little jingle taken from a traditional English nursery rhyme. Sergeant Mel Powell will let you hear how it sounds. Well, that's the way the AEFP uses it. And here's how our chief arranger and pinch-hitting conductor, Sergeant Jerry Gray, uses it in the American band of the AEF arrangement of Oranges and Lemons.
Was playing with the AAF that Christmas Day in Paris, 1944.
We carried on like real troopers in the full knowledge that we probably would never see Miller again, although that was not yet definite. They never gave up looking for various possibilities of his turning up somewhere. And so it was a half and half sort of a situation, where we were very sad about his disappearance, but on the other hand, very hopeful that it was not the last word, that he would show up, and we'd carry on just as we had in the past. Didn't happen that way, but we hoped it would.
In the course of this two-hour program, AEF listeners have heard the American Band of the AEF, conducted by Sergeant Jerry Gray, substituting for Major Glenn Miller, the Canadian Band of the AEF, directed by Captain Robert Farnan, and the British Army Radio Orchestra, directed by Sergeant Eric Robinson.
With them were Gwen Catley, Bill Davis, Teddy Brown, Jackie Hunter, and Cyril Fletcher.
Your masters of ceremonies were Warrant Officer Paul Dudley from Paris, and Ronnie Waldman and Jerry Wilmot from London.
And now the Allied Expeditionary Forces program invites listeners in the AEF and listeners at home in the United States, Canada, and the United Kingdom to join our combined orchestras and sing us on our way.
WOR, in connection with the British Broadcasting Corporation, has presented from England and France on this Christmas Day the Canadian Band with the AEF, the 3rd British Band with the AEF, and the American Band with the AEF, led by Sergeant Jerry Gray, but which is ordinarily conducted by Major Glenn Miller, who has been reported within the past 24 hours as missing. This was a special program of the type of entertainment that our fighting men are now seeing this wartime Christmas in the field.
Major Glenn Miller was one of nearly 300,000 Americans who lost their lives in the conflagration of World War II. Because he was such an icon, Michael McGurr says his loss led to numerous strange theories about what had happened to him.
Especially for Americans who want to believe that things don't happen to us and that if they do, there's got to be some larger explanation for it. In World War II, men disappeared all the time. I mean, soldiers disappeared. The list of the missing is still astonishing. Miller disappears. And yet, how can Glenn Miller, this icon, disappear? So it produces almost immediately this kind of conspiracy thinking. My favorite is the idea that he was on a secret mission from General Eisenhower to go make an approach to the Germans. He gets found out and murdered in a house of prostitution in Paris. Really, do we really seriously think that Dwight Eisenhower sat there and said, you know, I need a musician, get me Glenn Miller? There's no evidence for any conspiracy theory at all, just the reality that small planes and bad weather disappeared. It's artistically perfect, though, because Miller, forgive me, went out on a high note with this revered band, with his image intact, but at a time when show business and the music business were changing drastically back home. And he leaves, as I say, at the top of his fame and at a point where it's hard to envision what his post-war career would have been like, which isn't to say he would have failed, but only the kind of musical world that he knew was disappearing. His success was built on big bands. Big bands were losing their audiences. A core part of his audience was young people. Well, they were going to move on to rhythm and blues and rockabilly and rock and roll before very long. Now, Miller was a smart, adaptive man, but you can't envision what he was going to do.
The Miller AAF band would stay together after Miller's disappearance, playing for the next 7 months across the continent as the Allies liberated Europe. Because almost all of the recordings they made were radio transcriptions, the music of the AAF went unheard for many years after its wartime broadcast ended. And even today, when much of it has been issued on CD, it remains not nearly as well known as the music of the Miller civilian band that preceded it. Most critics think it was a musically superior band to the civilian orchestra. And jazz educator Janice Stockhouse says the influence of Miller's Army Air Force band does endure.
That group became the Airmen of Note, which is regarded as the finest current military band here in our country. He built this legacy that has existed long after his passing.
Glenn Miller left another legacy as well. the sustained morale of a generation of men and women who lived through World War II with his music as a soundtrack. The war separated many temporarily, and many forever. People flung across the planet, young and in the face of loneliness, boredom, fear, and grief, undertaking, in one way or another, the terrible enterprise of conflict. In such times, they could turn to music and hope, for just a little while, that home and happiness were somewhere in their future.
Good night, wherever you are.
May your dreams be pleasant dreams wherever you are.
If only one little wish that I wish comes true, I know that the angels will watch over you.
Watch over you, dear. Good night, wherever you are.
I'll be with you, dear, no matter how near or far.
This edition of Afterglow. Special thanks to Nat Peck, Michael McGurr, Janice Stockhouse, and Brent Wallerab. Production support for Afterglow comes from Bicycle Garage, offering complete bicycle repair and sales, as well as custom fitting services. Located at 507 East Kirkwood, next to the IU campus, and online at bikegarage.com. Bicycle Garage, for bicycling around the block and around the world since 1980. You can listen to many more Afterglow programs on our website at indianapublicmedia.org/afterglow. I'm David Brent Johnson, hoping that you'll join me again for more jazz, ballads, and American popular song on Afterglow.